This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start the week with Claude Buddy Leach, Jr., former congressman, former state lawmaker, and former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party, a man who is still involved in the political inertia of our state, and yesterday celebrated a significant birthday. Happy birthday, Congressman Leach.
Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. It was a great day.
80 years old.
Correct. 80 years of experience. Let's say it that way.
Well, you're a youngster compared to the Democratic candidate for the 6th District of the U.S. House of Representatives, a man you know pretty well.
Yes, certainly I do know former Governor Edwards. And certainly I am aware that he did states he's going to qualify for the 6th Congressional District.
When he got out of jail in 2011, the man who hired him was you, right?
That is correct. One of the requirements for six-month early release is that the applicant must have a job. And when others didn't offer him the appropriate job to meet the requirements, I told them to send me the application. I submitted it. I respect any man. I have quite a few working for me today that served their time in prison. And so he was not the only person I've given a job to coming out of prison, because I believe that's one of the most important steps in rehabilitation, is for a former inmate to have an income and to have a structured job to report to.
Well, one of the remarkable things about Edwin Edwards is that he served 8.5 years in prison, and he came out with the same spirit and joy of life. He's a guy who's resilient, if nothing else.
Yes, I would certainly state that that's my opinion also. He's resilient, and the times I have been in his presence, or he's been in mine, I've never heard the first whining or complaining about the time he served. I was told by members of his family that he told them he would go into prison with his shoulders back, and he'd come out of prison the same way. And to my knowledge, that's what he did.
And now he's trying to go back to the U.S. House of Representatives. You served there 1979 to 81. That was a different time. And Edwin Edwards goes back even farther than that. He was there in 1965 through 72 when Johnson and Nixon were the presidents of the United States. 50 years since he first arrived on Capitol Hill. What do you think his chances are?
I haven't analyzed the 6th Congressional District. I am aware, of course, that the redistricting has taken place and that there are 14 parishes now, with, of course, East Baton Rouge being the most populous. I'm aware that the district has about 72% of Caucasian voters, with about 22% African-American. The one item that I found interesting was that male voters, about 145,000, and female voters are over 173,000. So there are more female voters in the district. Now, your question was what I think his chances. I have no idea. I do know that one of the great things about America and our citizenship is if you meet the legal qualifications, anyone can run for office. So I'm not concerned that former Governor Edwards, as stated, he's going to run. Politically, as I stated earlier, I'm not that familiar with the 6th District now, other than the demographics that I have recently looked at. I think the people, the citizens of the 6th District, are looking to the future. I don't think they're using rearview mirrors because of the great development going on in our whole state, and particularly in the Baton Rouge area. I think they'll be looking for a person who is knowledgeable, and I would say that on that score, former Governor Edwards does certainly know the major economic interest in the state of Louisiana. I'm sure there are other candidates who are very much apprised of the various important developments in the 6th District. I don't know until the qualifying actually is completed who will be in the race, but I would suspect that former Governor Edwards would probably be, or will be, I'll state it that way, in a runoff.
Now, well, I wanted to ask you, you, of course, were chairman of the Democratic Party for some time, and the person who succeeded you, Karen Carter Peterson, and others in the party have been largely silent about Edwards and his political ambition at this stage in his life. Do you think it's good for the party for him to be running?
Well, I'm not that attuned to the statewide impact of the party. The party is an emblem, and we know what it stands for, and those are my basic values, and so I am a Democrat. I don't recall that former Governor Edwards was ever active as far as Democratic politics. My experience in the legislature, serving in the House, of course, almost 16 years, I didn't find the former governor to be partisan. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the voters of the 6th District, they certainly will have an opportunity of looking at all the candidates, and I trust them to make the right decision.
Well, yeah, you were in the House for three of his four terms in office as governor, and he was like nobody else. As far as walking in a room and dominating it, he still has that capacity at the age of 86.
Well, I do recall that he was, while he was governor, with his, I'll use the term leadership, the legislature, by a two-thirds vote, increased the severance tax on oil and gas. And that, to my knowledge, was the first tax increase on that industry since the Huey Long days. Now, that was such a small tax because he changed it to a percent of value. And, of course, the state reaped a great deal of revenue because the value of oil and gas escalated as it is the same price today. So I know that he had that leadership ability to put two-thirds of both the House and the Senate together. One who is listening might not recognize that Louisiana being a very diverse state, it is very, very difficult for a person to make offer the type of leadership that can attract over two-thirds from North Louisiana to South Louisiana to parishes with petroleum to parishes without. So as far as walking in a room, I don't know if he still dominates, but I know that he could explain issues very clearly. That was one item that legislators had a free access to his opinion, whether they asked for it or not. But he certainly had that ability to work with all of us, and that included the minority representatives and senators, as well as male, female, rural, urban, those from the coastal states and others.
Well, if somehow he pulls this off and wins, he will go back to the U.S. House at the age of 87. He was 37 when he went there the first time. And his new wife will actually be younger than Elaine was when Edwin went there 50 years ago. That's a different story. But here's something to chew on. I think if Edwin Edwards wins, he will be the last World War II veteran to have served in Congress. The last member of the greatest generation, Buddy Leach, Edwin Washington Edwards.
You know, I had not thought about that status, but he certainly is a veteran, and I think that he can identify even today with the conditions that many of our former servicemen are facing when they are released or when they're injured in these recent wars. So I think that veterans do have an appreciation for having served the country. Now, I do not know the demographics of the 6th District, if the number of veterans in that district can would make a difference or if they'd vote for him. But he would, I would assume, according to what you stated, he would be one of the last, if not the last.
I think he might be the very last because they're either dying off or not running for office anymore, like John Dingell.
So. I think John Dingell, I served with, a great congressman, and I appreciated all his experiences, along with Leon Panetta and men who had served and lived in the active duty days of World War II. My active duty service was during the Cold War, much later, but I also had 3 years of active duty.
1956 to 1959, Buddy Leach was in the U.S. Army. And you went in the Army after having polio. You may be the only one to have done that. I would imagine you could have gotten out based on having polio, if you wanted.
Well, I was classified, as your audience will remember, and you of course do. At that time, we had the selective service, in other words, the draft. And you had a card, and your classification was, of course, based on your physical ability, and I was classified 4F. Unfortunately, I had contacted the polio while a student at LSU, and by the grace of God, I recuperated and went back and finished my degree, and I was able to talk a local draft board doctor in my hometown of Leesville to reclassify me, and that's how I got in.
So, in 10 years later, as you know, people were making up excuses to stay out. People like Dick Cheney, for example. You made up excuses to stay in.
Well, I wanted several things. I really feel like every citizen owes our country. And I thought it was a good opportunity for me. I had experiences on active duty that I never would have received otherwise. I'm not stating that every citizen should serve in the military. But I do think every citizen has an obligation to this great republic, and serving on active duty is one of them. Naturally, today we do not need that many, but there are other methods of serving this country.
The voice we're hearing is the distinctive one of Claude Buddy Leach, who turned 80 years old yesterday. March 30th, 1934 is his birth date. One day before Shirley Jones was born, the matriarch of the Partridge family. Happy 80th birthday to Shirley Jones. But Buddy Leach left an impression for many who covered him in Louisiana, and he is still, as you can hear, full of vim and vigor about what's going on. And we're going to take a short break, but we will return and talk with Congressman Leach about Mary Landrieu's quest for a fourth term as U.S. Senator. And Buddy Leach also knows Bobby Jindal pretty well. They were campaigning for the same office in 2003 when Kathleen Blanco won the race for governor of Louisiana. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Back in minute and a half on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Sashika Marchand-Bauchon is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Buddy Leach is with us for a while longer, elected chairman of the Louisiana Democratic Party back in 2010, and that was after a long 10-year, 16 years in the Louisiana legislature and a term in Congress as well. 2003, he ran for governor. Got lots of votes, but he and Richard Ayoub kind of canceled each other out. And the runoff that year was between Bobby Jindal, who ran first in the primary, and Kathleen Blanco, who ended up winning the governor's office 52-48% over Bobby Jindal. In that campaign, Congressman Leach, you said you wanted to use a Brillo pad to scrub the budget. Has Governor Jindal done that? Has he done that?
Governor Jindal has done, has accomplished reducing certain operative cost of state government, but at the same time has increased a great deal that's not publicized. I have no personal problem working with the governor now. I do find that several things he has done would not have been, in my opinion, the best interest of the state. I think he emasculated higher education in Louisiana right at the time that we were beginning to be acknowledged as having very fine graduate programs and research, and that was through the budget. He talks about restoring money, but that's money from the tuition of the citizens paying for their children to go there. So I think that was one thing that I will certainly question his administration of. Secondly, dismantling the state hospitals and allegedly to save money. I question that, and I also question the effect of that on our indigent, as well as the superior quality that our medical schools were gaining from the training opportunities. There are just many things about dismantling that system that haven't yet to be proved. I couldn't believe that the legislature approved some of it in the contracts with these private hospitals had not been completed. But all that, you know, what's already taken place, we'll work with what we have. I am concerned about elderly and indigent that do not have a safety net, and I believe our state has provided that for years. Very concerned. Public education, I think, has also suffered. I appreciate the fact that Governor Jindal had complete control of the board of elementary and secondary, and I appreciate the fact that he did put people in place that would go with his ideas, and including bringing the young superintendent in. And I know that Superintendent White has worked very diligently, but at this date, I think there was another approach working with our teachers. I think they're the ones that have suffered the most out of this. And having been in the legislature and having talked about various issues in education, I find that this administration does a lot more talk than they produce results. I'm also very concerned more effort hasn't been put into the pre-K and early childhood development. I know that there are some pilot programs going on, but this is a statewide need, and there's money for other activities. There could have been money to go ahead and start our statewide early childhood development programs in all 64 parishes.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say these are some of the ideas that I would differ with the administration. The main one, and I'll let you come back on, Jim. When he went throughout the country after being elected and stated that when he became governor, half the state was underwater and half the state was under indictment. To me, he trashed the citizens who had voted for him. I'm very proud of Louisiana, and I'm very proud of all of our people. And the ethics that he bragged about doing, ethics legislation that he went around the nation bragging about, resulted in the ethics board not having a single case for 4 years because of the legislation not being clear enough to enact.
Okay.
Fortunately, they went back and amended some of it, and we now have a more active ethical standards to be guided by.
By the way, he stole that line from Billy Tozan. And recently, he used one of Edwin Edwards' lines, surprisingly, saying a man is as young as the woman he feels. And Bobby Jindal is not a person without knowing a good line when he hears one. And I'm waiting for him to issue a line that is repeated by somebody else. But your wife was on the Board of Supervisors at LSU, Laura, for how long?
18 years.
18?
She was appointed by Governor Edwards. She's an LSU graduate. And had a great interest in the university. She served under Governor Foster and served under Governor Blanco.
Now, she was not reappointed by Bobby Jindal.
No, he, you know, decided that he liked people on that board that would understand directions that he sent down to it.
Okay. Now, a question from a listener was about the diversity of the board, and your wife brought some as a female. We have 16 members of the LSU Board of Supervisors, I think all of whom now have contributed to Governor Jindal's campaigns. And of those 16, we've got 15 white males and one black female. That's it. Is that the kind of diversity that should be reflective of the state of Louisiana?
Of course, I do not think so. To begin with, it's not reflective of the students, much less the citizens of this state. And it lends itself to the fact that it is a controlled board. I'm sure there's some very honorable men and the lady on the board, but not being representative of the makeup of this state is, you know, to me, a very serious flaw that could be corrected and should be corrected.
What do you make of Senator Landrieu's chances as she seeks a fourth term and is now considered the underdog by prognosticator Nate Silver? Is Mary Landrieu toast, or does she have a chance to win another 6 years as a U.S. Senator?
I don't know about Nate Silver, whoever you mentioned. I do know the poll that counts. It's a poll on Election Day, and I definitely believe very sincerely that Mary Landrieu will continue representing this state in the United States Senate.
Why do you think she will win?
I think she'll win because during the years that she has served, she has provided constituent service, and that is a key for a person going to vote for her. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be the way she's going to be reelected. She's going to be reelected because in today's Washington politics, both Democrat and Republican, they understand that it's cost an exorbitant amount of money to run for office. And I think that's one of the fallacies that we really need to look at in our democracy. She understands that today individuals can go through the PACs and donate millions who oppose her philosophy. But Mary, as far as Louisiana, recently she guided and got the flood control insurance premiums stabilized so that our citizens along the coast can afford to keep some type of insurance. Now, it's not a final answer, but I happen to have followed that, having a great deal of property on the coast. Not that I was concerned about the my personal home. We're not on the coast, but our properties are, and many of our workers who have homes. So I followed that, and it was Mary Landrieu and a Republican that brought that about. We did not have the leadership or the strength in the Senate if she had not done this. I know also that now, as the state recognizes, she has been appointed chairman of the Senate Energy Committee. If any state needs to control, now I say control, but have that influence of the chairman of an industry, a regulator, in the United States, it is Louisiana. Mary is very familiar with the energy industry. She understands that the great industrial development has taken place in Louisiana, all across the coast, but emphasized over here in southwest Louisiana with the announced and underway new industries to use the three factors we have. The cheap natural gas, the pipeline structure is already in, and then, of course, the Gulf of Mexico. Mary is very familiar with those items and can work with these industries as they come into Louisiana as our nation becomes an exporter of energy. This is a very new, unique position for this nation to be in. Mary also favors the pipeline to bring the Canadian tar oil to southwest Louisiana and southeast Texas for refining. Another opportunity for many people to work.
Will you help her? Will you contribute to her campaign?
Yes. Well, I have done that, and it's because I think the state of Louisiana needs that leadership that she has developed. I'm not only, not only have I contributed, I serve on her finance committee, and I know what a tough job it is facing those independent PACs that started months ago lambasting her.
You think it'll be a tough campaign?
Oh, definitely. All of her campaigns have been tough, and I disagree with her on many issues. But going back to some issues that, you know, connect her with the voters, is she's led the fight for adoption legislation. I have two adopted granddaughters, and I'm very, very, my whole life is wrapped up in them. And Mary stood there and did the work.
You're making a strong case for her reelection, but you know as well as anybody, Congressman Leach, that this state is now a solidly red state, that she's the only Democrat standing, the only one elected statewide. How can she buck the trend that is in place?
I think the independent vote, and I think many of our friends who are registered Republicans will vote for her because they recognize the importance to our state to have the position of leadership that Mary Landrieu now has. That's why I think she will win. I'm very knowledgeable that she is our only statewide Democratic official. We have a lot of Democratic officials on the local level and parish level. But I know it's going to be a tough race, and the name of the game is going to be getting the vote out, no matter which party and no matter which part of the state. Many of our citizens, unfortunately, are either turned off by campaigns or they don't understand their responsibility in casting that vote. And that is really something that we should all hang our heads over. I know our Secretary of State has tried to emphasize it. Previous statewide officials have talked about it. But the turnout in Louisiana is pitiful.
Charles on North Foster. Charles, you're on the air with Congressman Leach. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning to your guests. I heard, Jim, you referred to Louisiana as a solidly red state. I guess I disagree with it. Now, it's been gerrymandered to be solidly red if you go and try to vote for a Democrat. But what I wanted to find out is how come no one is talking about Mr. Bill Cassidy and his casual connection with the Koch brothers over there in Texas who think of Louisiana as their footstool? And I'll hang up and listen to your guests.
Now, David Vitter calls the Koch brothers great patriots. It's all a matter of perception. If you're on the same side, they seem like good folks. But Democrats like Charles on North Foster don't care for them too much. What's your take, Congressman Leach?
I, of course, do not know the Koch brothers. I've read how they came about with their financial empire. And my take on it is that no group, no interest should buy an election. And my take on it is that the citizens of various states are beginning to recognize how distorted the political ads are. And when they see who they're paid by, they are beginning to take note. One group, it's in many states, including here in Louisiana, they've been funding television ads for several months opposing Mary. I do believe that people are going to react to that. I think that it's obscene, the amount of money they put against the candidate. If they're not willing to come out, if they're regulated under law about how much an individual can give to a candidate, but when they allow corporations to and labor unions and others to use PACs without revealing their donors, this is a problem for the whole nation, not just Louisiana.
It quite likely will be the most expensive Senate race in the history of our state, exceeding the 1986 race between John Breaux and Henson Moore. In that one, John Breaux was the underdog and ended up winning. Do you see some parallels between then and now? You're old enough, as am I, of course, to remember that race.
And I do remember, of course, that I consider myself a good friend to both men. So I think that time Louisiana could not lose which one actually went up to represent Louisiana. They both had a proven record in the Congress, and I cannot recall the financial situation. It was an expensive race, but I think both men attracted a great deal of funds from their proven records.
Well, Congressman, it's always good to talk with you. Belated happy birthday, and let's keep the conversation going sometime soon.
Anytime, Jim. And thank you for the opportunity.
Always a pleasure. Buddy Leach. Take care. We're joined now by Francis Rooney. He's the former U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, 2005 to 2008, during the second term of George Walker Bush as president. And he previously served as CEO of Rooney Holdings, an investment and holding company based in Florida and in Oklahoma, a man who follows the politics of the Vatican quite closely, and that it was on vivid display last week as the president and the Pope met. What do you think, Ambassador Rooney?
Well, thank you for having me on, Jim.
What do you think of President Obama and Pope Francis?
Well, I think after six-plus years of a fairly attenuated and cool relationship, I'm really gratified that the president went to see the Pope. And regardless of some of the different spins that maybe attend to the meeting, the fact that they met in itself is a very important thing.
Well, the president is not a Roman Catholic, but he does have a history of being affiliated with other Catholics, particularly in his time in Chicago when his office was at the Church of the Holy Name. Does that give him some particular insight that other presidents might not have had?
No, I don't think so. I think the administration's been a whole lot more secular than, for example, the administration of Ronald Reagan or George Bush were, which were much more in line with Catholic theology and teaching.
Well, does it matter if a president, for example, differs with the Vatican on abortion rights? Does that matter, Ambassador Rooney?
You know, it's inevitable that when you have many disagreements, that it would cast some type of pell on the relationship, but I don't think it would frustrate the common objectives of the Holy See's diplomacy and the fact that the president would meet with the Pope and talk about some of those common objectives. I think is really important. I mean, you know, there's so many things that we have need to leverage the Holy See's soft power in the world. You know, the Holy See disagreed with George Bush about Iraq.
We'll hold on that and come back in 90 seconds, 297-5633, with Ambassador Francis Rooney, author of The Global Vatican. Jim Inkster, you're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. We're back with Francis Rooney, the former ambassador to the Vatican, doing so from 2005 to 2008, and the author of The Global Vatican, a book in which Ambassador Rooney argues that U.S. foreign policy has much to gain from its relationship with the Holy See and vice versa. How so?
The Holy See and the United States have common principles on which their foreign policy is based. You know, the defense of human dignity and the natural rights of man, and the seeking to spread religious freedom and freedom and transparency and good government around the world. These are things where we're natural allies, and that's part of why I wrote the book, is to show the important contribution the Holy See's made in these areas in the world, and that it's important that we consider the ability of the Holy See to impact world events right now. You know, a lot of the conflicts we see are religious and ethnically inspired, which tends to argue for using this kind of soft power.
Now, you were born in 1953, and when President Kennedy was elected in 1960, he did so in spite of being a Roman Catholic, not because he was a Roman Catholic, and still, he's the only Catholic to be president of the United States. But you say the relations between the Vatican and the United States were transformed under the presidency of Ronald Reagan. What happened during the 8 years that Reagan was president of the United States?
Well, Ronald Reagan realize the role the Holy See could play in the world using its soft power to help advance these causes I mentioned, and specifically to help with Pope John Paul being the first Polish pope and having grown up under communism, to advance the fight against communism, which was central to President Reagan's administration.
And when you were ambassador, this came at a pivotal time between the United States and the Catholic Church. It was right after 9/11, and of course we were in wars in two different countries. How was the United States viewed by the Vatican and the rest of the world at that time?
Well, it's no secret that neither the Vatican nor very many countries in Europe, especially the older part of Europe, were supportive of the second Iraq invasion. But despite that, opposition to Iraq, there were many common things that were still able to be pursued with the Holy See, like the programs against trafficking in persons and against some of the threats to human dignity in Africa and in Eastern Europe. Now, one of the good things was that the Pope Benedict had just come in when we got over there, and he was a new pope, and he had not been involved in the Iraq opposition, and so it's a little easier to kind of work forward going forward with him.
297-5633 is your number. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. And our remaining times with Ambassador Francis Rooney, who was a supporter of President Bush and went all the way to the Vatican as the ambassador, a position that was once held by Lindy Boggs. Did you know her?
I did. She was a fantastic lady, a fantastic Louisianan, and a fantastic American citizen. She was just great. And she had a great reputation in Rome for her Southern gentility, her dignity, and her compassion for the important issues that affect the United States and the Holy See.
What's your perception about Pope Francis?
Well, I think he's very interesting. You know, we don't know yet everything we will know about him, and we also don't know yet the extent to which he may be being misconstrued by the press in the United States, who have wanted to jump on his comments about income inequality and capitalism. You know, I think it's important to look at the perspective that he comes from. You know, Argentina is not the United States. It's very corrupt. A lot of the companies are very corrupt there, and they certainly don't have the kind of safety net that we have to look after our disadvantaged people.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a Republican. I don't think there's any mystery about this. Even hosted a fundraiser at your home for Mitt Romney. Were you disappointed when Romney lost?
I was. I think Mitt Romney would have made a great president of the United States. He's a very logical, good decision maker. He has a track record of being able to manage complex variables and make the right decision. He's obviously more to my ideological slant than President Obama. But I do think it's unfortunate that candidate Romney, because of the primary process or because of his own change in views or whatever it was constrained in being able to embrace comprehensive immigration reform. And I do think that's a critical issue for the Republican Party.
Now, Romney, of course, is a Mormon. That's been well documented, and some say he got a bad rap because of his faith. But nonetheless, I don't think President Obama really zoned in on that like he could have. That was not the issue in the race. What was your take about the respective religious beliefs of the candidates and whether or not that had any impact at all on what occurred in 2012?
Jim, I agree with you 100%. I think there was a little bit of that in the 2008 campaign, but I don't think it had anything to do with 2012. I think candidate Romney's statements about religious freedom and the First Amendment and tolerance for all religions were right on point. You're right, President Obama didn't go there either, and this campaign was about the future of young people, immigration, and the economy.
Now, Bobby Jindal's running for president. He's a Roman Catholic. Do you know anything about him?
Not as much as I'd like to. I've met him once, and I was really impressed with his decency, his character, his strength of intellect, and his understanding of the important issues. I'd only met him once. I was very, very impressed with what a fine person he is.
Ambassador, it was reported that you donated $1 million to Romney's Super PAC in 2012, and if you believe strongly in a candidate, as you do, and have the resources, and that's the law of the land, then go for it. But what do you think about the Super PACs that are now dominating the political scene?
You know, Jim, George Bush's finance department campaign raised less than $170 million, and from what I understand, the last campaign, President Obama was in the mid-700s of millions, and candidate Romney was in the 500 of millions or something. It's just way too much money. I think that has a corrosive impact on what's going on in our country right now.
But you're part of the system, and you play by the rules that are in place, and you played at a pretty high level, but you're saying this is not good for our country.
I think it's too much. I really do. I'm going to give what I can legally give to people that I think are advancing the causes that are important to me, and I consider it part of my public service to be able to support and advance the ideas that are important to me. But, boy, when you look at $1.5 billion or $1.3 billion spent on this last presidential election, you've got to step back and say, couldn't some of that money have been put to a better use?
You know probably as well as anybody that the Catholic voting bloc in the United States is one of the most reliable barometers of how a presidential election is going to go, and it's moved around just as the outcomes have moved around. What do you think of the way Catholics vote? Some obviously are fervent Democrats, and others like you are staunch Republicans.
Well, you know, George Bush got 44%, and or more even, I think, and you know, I don't know. I think that it's gotten more complicated because of the Latin question. So many of the Catholic voters now are Hispanic. So you've almost got to look at both the Hispanic percentage and the Catholic percentage together. And that's where I harken back to the Bush campaign, because he got historic record for a Republican of both Hispanics and Catholics.
What does it mean to have a Hispanic pope?
Well, I think it means a lot for the New World. You know, you look at this guy, I consider him one of us. He's from the New World. He's free of that historical European perspective, which it makes things move slowly over there. And look at how clear he's been able to be in looking at the Vatican Bank and looking at the Curia and seeking to impose more cross-functional skill leverage and executive-style management in the Curia, appointing Cardinal O'Malley and Cardinal Worrell to be a big part of that process. I'm really encouraged.
We're finishing up with Francis Rooney, the author of The Global Vatican and the former U.S. ambassador to the Vatican. What do you see as the future of the Catholic Church? There are more than a billion of us on the planet who are Roman Catholics, but it's still a distinct minority worldwide. But does it have a place when it comes to matters of faith and politics?
Well, my experience is less in the theological side of things and more in the school of, in the foreign policy and interaction among states side of things. And I think in that area, certainly the Holy See's got a very strong and important voice because of its unique sovereignty. You know, it's the only sovereign entity in the world that can speak with that kind of authority, but yet doesn't have a hegemonic or territorial agenda. And as such, it can be very effective. As when Lindy was ambassador during the Bosnian activities, the Holy See was particularly effective in arguing for some of the kind of justice and less violent and less atrocities that were taking place over there. It was a good ally of the United States.
Well, thank you, Ambassador Rooney. It's always nice to talk with you. I know we've chatted a time or two in the past, and I hope so. Hope we have the chance to do so again soon.
I hope so, Jim, and I hope you have a nice day.
You too. Thank you, Ambassador Francis Rooney. And we're joined in our remaining moments by David Precise. He's the executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Louisiana. That's NAMI Louisiana. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. And you were involved in important endeavors in our state, and you've got some remarkable education sessions that are coming forward in the next few days. Tell us what's going to happen.
Yes, we have our NAMI Louisiana State Conference is coming up this Friday and Saturday in Baton Rouge at the Louisiana Resource Center for Educators on Florida Boulevard. And that it has 15 education sessions over 2 days. We have a Democrat and a Republican, a senator and representative come to speak to that and those issues, and we have hope for a nice crowd for an issue that's largely not talked about in our state.
Why is it not talked about?
It's been historically a taboo thing for people, and it's a big part of what NAMI does is to provide public education such as this conference, and we have 10 affiliates across the state that work with families and individuals that live with mental illness and try to help them work with that.
Well, a lot of us are eccentric. Some might say more than that. How do you qualify mental illness?
Mental illness is very much like any other physical illness that people don't think of it that way. It is it's something that's treatable. 70 to 90% of people do better if they get treatment. And a big part of what NAMI does is to try to bring to light what that really is. So it's something that people need to be aware of and not afraid of.
I see you've got some people in the medical fraternity on this panel at the state conference this week, but how much of it is related to prescriptions that people take. Does a pill make us feel better, make us feel, quote, normal?
Well, medications are certainly an important part of this issue, and access to medications are. So we need, you know, one of our big issues is we need people to have health care coverage and access to appropriate medications, as well as community treatments, long-term treatments if needed. So all of those things have to go together to create a robust mental health care system, and we in this state are pretty far behind on that.
We're visiting with David Precise. He is the executive director of the National Alliance of Mental Illness in Louisiana, and this chapter is one of one that is prevalent all across the country. How many people are involved in your organization nationwide?
Well, there's every state has a state organization like we are in Baton Rouge, and there's over 1,100 affiliates. It's the nation's largest mental health advocacy organization, and so there's hundreds of thousands of people involved in the movement. Certainly, we have a lot of work to do in Louisiana.
You've got Representative Scott Simon, Senator Ben Nevers in this array of people who will be at the conference and speaking. What legislatively is on the front burner right now?
If you're just asking me personally, Medicaid expansion is still, there was a report in the Baton Rouge Advocate that 163,000 people in this state that live with a mental illness don't have access to health insurance because of our lack of expanding Medicaid. That's probably the biggest one. But
you're saying the governor's decision to reject the Medicaid expansion is affecting 160,000 people who have mental illness?
There was a report in the Advocate recently, probably in the last month, that was the number that was put out.
Now, sometimes people who are mentally ill are viewed as being dangerous, threats to society. Is that true?
It's no more true than you or me or the average citizen being dangerous. It's a much better indicator for violence if someone has recently been divorced, lost a job, or has a history of physical abuse. And in fact, people that live with a mental illness are 5 times more likely to be the victim of a violent crime than to commit a violent crime. And so as long, just like with any other problem that people have physically, if they are given proper treatment, they can come back and live very productive lives.
So you have Dr. Bo Clark, the coroner for East Baton Rouge Parish. He's on the panel as well, and of course he's involved in this issue as well.
He is, and I've heard him speak. And one of the things we note are the coroners are involved in what families have to deal with. And he at a public meeting noted he had to provide more than 1,000 what are called coroner emergency certificates for people that visit emergency rooms and need assistance. And one of the big problems in our state, as your first guest pointed out, is when we have knocked out all of our state hospitals, a lot more people end up in the emergency room or jails, and it costs us a lot of money.
The 2014 National Alliance of Mental Illness Louisiana State Conference this week, starting Friday at the Louisiana Resource Center for Educators. That's 5550 Florida Boulevard. For those who'd like to register, can they do so?
They can. Our website, it's the best way, NAMI, N-A-M-I, NAMILouisiana.org. And you can also give us a call locally at 225-291-6262.
Want to say those again?
Yeah, the number, again, local is 291-6262, or the website, NAMILouisiana.org.
What's the biggest challenge for those facing challenges of this kind in our state right now?
Just to get to resources that they need, and there's always a need for more, but also the communication piece is really important, and to know where to go, and that's why NAMI exists.
Thank you for joining us today. David Precise, the executive director of NAMI Louisiana. And the conference, as stated, starts Friday at 8:30. That's this Friday, April 4th. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, keep listening and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.